Vote Resident Cyphus. Please report to the Overseer's office.
Hello, Overseer. You wanted to see me? You're here. Good. We've got a problem. A big one. Oh, okay. The controller chip for our water purification system has given up the ghost.
That doesn't sound good.
Nope, not at all. We can't make another one, and the process is too complicated for a workaround. Simply put, we're running out of drinking water. No water, no vault. This is crucial to our survival. And frankly, I think you're the only hope we have.
Me?
Yep, you, Cyphus. You need to go find us another controller chip. We estimate we have 4 to 5 months until the vault runs out of water.
We need that chip, not excuses.
Get it? It's like Darth Vader.
Why is that funny? You don't seem to be taking this very seriously. Losing our water chip isn't something to laugh about.
Laugh? No, heck no. Our vault's livelihood is in jeopardy. Why would I laugh?
You were laughing.
Laughter? Pah! I have no time for fun. I have the whole vault to look after. Anywho, we marked your Pip-Boy with the location of another vault. Not a bad place to start, I think. So, there it is.
Actually, I have a question.
Really?
What made you decide to pick me?
We drew straws. You drew the shortest straw, so that meant you were the chosen one.
I don't remember drawing a straw.
Well, you didn't, of course.
I didn't?
No, we did. We drew it for you, that is.
You drew straws for the whole vault?
Yep, sure did.
For everyone in it?
Uh-huh.
That is a buttload of straws.
Yeah, no doubt.
We barely have any resources other than heavily rationed food. Where did we get so many straws?
Oh, it was a government test.
Test?
Yeah, they wanted to see if an entire group of people could survive a nuclear war with nothing but,
But straws.
Right.
Not believing you right now.
No, you're right. It wasn't straws.
No.
No, actually, we had a lottery to see who would have to go get the chip.
Oh?
Yeah, we drew your number, so, yeah, there it is.
What number did you pick?
Huh?
What number was I that made me be chosen?
You were like 4.
Number 4?
Yep, we did it based on apartment number, and we picked 4.
My apartment number is 12.
Right, because you see we drew the number, and then we times it by 3.
To make it 12.
Exactly.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You're totally making this up as you go.
What? No.
You are. You just want me to go out there and get your dang chip. Why me?
We like you.
What?
Yeah, everyone in the vault voted.
Oh, so now you voted.
Yeah, we voted. Yeah, we sure did. We voted for you, and we decided we think you're the bravest person in the entire vault, and that it should be you who braves the wasteland to find that chip.
Really?
Yep. I mean, honestly, what honor. This is a chance for you to brave the horrors of the wasteland, all to save your fellow vault dwellers.
And you voted to come to this.
Yep, got the results card right here on my desk. Right there. Right there. Says Cyphus in huge black letters.
That one?
Yep, that white card right there.
Let me see it.
Huh?
I want to see the card.
Oh, there's no need to actually see the card. I've already told you your name is on it.
No, give it here. It's got my name on it, right?
No, you don't. No!
This isn't a card with my name on it. This is a coupon for Netflix.
Yeah, right. No, this, you're right, because we wanted you to have this as a reward since we voted.
A Netflix coupon.
Right.
How can I use it? The world's gone up there.
Exactly. Enjoy.
No, there's no more Netflix.
Exactly.
You know what? I think you've done nothing but lie to me this whole time. What's going on?
Nothing. We just need that chip. I mean, only 150 days left. Guess you better 23 skidoo.
I think you're lying about the chip.
What? How dare you? I mean, we're fine here. We're all fine here. How are you?
Okay, what does the chip look like?
Huh?
The water chip. What's it look like?
There's a picture of it right here. Yep, that's it.
That's a picture of a blender.
Nope, no siree. That's a water chip.
It says blender right on the picture.
Right, because Yeah, Blender is the name of the company that built the chip.
Oh, come off it, Overseer. What's going on?
With what?
Don't give me that. You're hiding something.
No.
I know all about how these underground vaults are actually supposed to be social experiments. That's what's going on here, isn't it? That's why you've been lying to me this whole time. I'm part of the dang experiment, aren't I?
Social experiments? Don't be paranoid. There's no experiments.
What's that folder in your hand?
Huh? What, this folder?
Yep, the one that says Vault Social Experiment on it.
Oh, this is just my list of what to do with all those extra straws.
Give me that.
No.
Vault 1337 Social Experiment. Keep Siphus down here for 5 years, and then pretend you need another water chip.
You're paraphrasing.
Wait a second. This whole vault is a test to see how long you could keep me isolated from the rest of the world?
No, not completely. Well, actually, yeah, it was all you.
Oh, this is bullcrap.
Hey, at least we're protecting you from that nuclear wasteland outside.
You're not lying about that, are you?
What? No, of course not. The war against the Chinese ended in nuclear devastation. There's nothing up there but a dusty shell of the former world.
Really?
Wait, what are you doing? Don't open the vault door now. Did the horror of the Chinese army... Look, the Chinese must have left.
So you kept me down here as a government experiment to see how long you could make me think there had been a nuclear war.
Yeah.
So why the water chip story? Why did you want me to leave?
Oh, actually, we totally improvised that part.
Really?
Yeah, nothing personal. We all don't like you.
I'm crushed.
Indeed.
So there never was a nuclear war.
No.
I'm trying hard not to be completely pissed off right now.
Well, at least you know you can actually use the Netflix coupon.
I hate you.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 37th episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me once again is Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
Woohoo! Yeah, I just figured I'd start differently this time. Usually I'm like, great, fantastic! But, you know, I'm trying to cut down the I like so much, because the FCC still sends me letters.
Oh, right.
Sometimes
right.
I hear breathing on the other side whenever I'm talking to people on the phone, which is funny, because I have a cell phone. So, it might really be me breathing. But no, it's been good. It's been a crazy summer, very very busy for actually both of us. It sounds like, and I'll be glad to get into the fall time for, into the fallout. You know, the little shadow foreshadowing of what is to come. You know, so yeah, it's still kind of like up in the 110 degree weather out here, and it's like, okay, that's enough of that. So
yeah. Well, so like you alluded to there, this show will actually be all about Fallout 1 and 2, mainly, and we'll also talk a little bit about Fallout Tactics, and just, what we want to do is just kind of get a basis for, of course, Fallout New Vegas is coming out, and we always talk about Fallout 3, so we wanted to kind of go back a little bit and give people a little bit more information about what those first two Fallout games are about, and how they will tie into the new one that's coming out in October, Fallout New Vegas. So, you know, I figured this would be a good time to kind of get together and do that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of looking back at the games, but one of the things that we talked about, Sean and I were talking about, was before this, was we really wanted to kind of not just focus on just the games, but like make it more about an overall the story in the games, and make it so that, you know, those of you out there who have not played the Fallout games, there is time to repent, you know. Those of you who haven't played the Fallout games would actually be able to understand the story of what it's about, so that if you decided to take the plunge into the one coming out, New Vegas, you would actually know a little more about what's going on, simply because, you know, you've heard this mentioned previously, of course, probably 1,000 times, was that this New Vegas is being made by the guys who did Fallout 1 and 2. So this is very much to the metal, whereas Fallout 3 was sort of an incredibly well tied in story, but it was sort of treated as its own kind of entity in a way. But this time it's back to the metal, and it's looking to be, I don't know. It's looking to be better than Fallout 3, and I don't know. It's going to be a tough one to say, and I know somebody out there seriously just had a car accident and went off the road, and they're already filing charges to me. So, it's one of those things where but the storyline in Fallout, and I'll be straight up, you know, a lot of people ask me that, why Fallout? Why are you so obsessed with Fallout? I'm like, it's just the way they do the story. There's so much about it that's so fun, and that's what we wanted to focus on, was, you know, what about this in the story is so interesting, and how this is going to tie into Fallout New Vegas. So you could almost call this like the prerequisite test to the Fallout Vegas test, so to speak. So.
Yeah, cool. I'm really excited to talk about it. I mean, these are games that, you know, the first one came out in 97, and if you count Wasteland, which came out in 88, you know, we've been playing these for a long time. And I'm really excited to talk about this. We, you know, of course, you and I talked about this before on Online Gamers Anthology, when we had the first Fallout episode. That was, boy, how many years ago was that? Like 2?
Oh,
3?
I know. It was like, it felt like forever. It was like, yeah, I guess it's almost been, good heavens, it almost has been 2-3 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. But, yeah, so I'm excited to talk about this. But I guess before we do that, what have you been up to since last we've talked? It's been a while.
Oh, heavens. You know, I guess the biggest piece of information that I could throw out on my side, funny enough, tying right into this, one of my goals for Fallout New Vegas was to finish the other three Fallout games. And anybody knows, if you have Steam, the online service Steam, you can get a hold of these games real easy. Shoot, you can get them at Target in the little pack. And so one of my goals was always to finish, you know, Fallout 2 I just finished already, and I wanted to go back and finish Fallout Tactics. And sure enough, in the last little bit here, I finally finished Fallout Tactics. I don't know what clicked differently this time, but I think the kicker was, this time as I played it, I was in it for the storyline part of it. I read it for the articles. No, I do. I was in it for the storyline part of it, so it was almost like I was playing and just eating it up at twice the normal level, because everything was story in some form. It's kind of cool to go back. I dare say it's one of those things where it's almost better to play Fallout 3 and get the gist of everything and then go back to Fallout 1 and 2, simply because that's where you're getting – it's almost like going back in time and seeing the story in its original form after you heard about the whole bigger picture.
Yeah, and so plus, I think that Fallout 3 told the story a lot better, you know, the way things were presented and the way things kind of fell together, because in Fallout 1 it was all giant text boxes, you know, that you had to read, and I think a lot of people probably
skipped
that.
It was hard to do back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like the cinematics hadn't quite gotten to the level. In fact, the funny thing is, I don't think the cinematics of games really reached a major level until Half-Life 1 came out and kind of proved to everybody the game can almost function as a movie in a way. And after that, everybody just ran with it, and all of a sudden, you know, suddenly games weren't about just shooting anymore. They're about putting you into these characters and these stories, and you know, Fallout 3 just hit it right on the head with the feel of it. And so you kind of go back to 1 and 2, and you're like, This is what they were referring to. I mean, there's it's riddled with stuff. And okay, I'm going to say straight up, I've been a Fallout fanatic since those games were out, since the days of Wasteland. And going back and playing Tactics and Fallout 2, I picked up links between Fallout 2 and Vegas that I didn't even pick up on until I played Fallout 2, and even like links between Fallout 2 and Fallout 3 that I was like, oh my gosh, I never noticed that. You know, we'll get into that soon, but yeah, it was beating Fallout Tactics. It was quite the undertaking, but I was absolutely baffled at how much fun that game was. Very hard at times, but it was an incredibly interesting game. And for those of you out there who are like, well, I'm not an RPG guy, it's not really an RPG. There's elements to it, but I would classify it as a mix between Fallout and the RTS game Commandos. where you would have to have a team, and each one of them had an ability, and you snuck them in to do different things. Just a blast to play.
Yeah, that's a good description. I really liked, I mean, we'll talk about that in a second, but yeah, I really liked that game too. And of course it lacked the story, I think, that the other ones had, but
that's right.
It was still a fun game.
That's right. Yeah, it was a good time. So this will be a good episode. We'll have fun with this one. And everybody, it's funny because everybody's like, you're finally going to talk about Fallout. And I'm like, I won't scream so good so many times. I'll just try to, so my line in this episode, because it is Fallout directly, my line will be so adequate because I have to sound like, you know, that's fantastic. We're talking about Fallout. That's great. So adequate.
Good times. Good times.
So incredibly average.
Awesome. As for me, I Dragon Con is coming up next week, and I have been preparing for that with my the costume that I started talking about almost a year ago. People who have been listening to us, you know, since last year, since the beginning, I guess, hopefully, last year we did Dragon Con. And I went there, and I got that little sound bite from SM Sterling, and I went to a couple panels that I talked about, and I just had so much fun. I mean, it was one of those things that really opened my eyes up to things like costuming, which I never really participated in before. I never really got into that, but I always thought it was kind of cool. And then I went to a panel where they described like how to do this, how easy it is, and how you just go around, you find like, you know, scavenged goods, you know, and you put it together. You find an old tire and you cut it up and you make that your shoulder armor and you do this stuff. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. That would be a lot of fun. So yeah. I actually did that. And I had a little bit. I think I posted on my other website at one point where I had like the beginnings of the costume. And then Fallen Earth had a costume contest last year that I kind of entered. And I had again, like kind of the beginnings of the costume, but it's evolved so much since then, and it's actually pretty scary. It's I'm kind of going for the mutant raider kind of thing. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's warped. Let's just say that. So I'm really excited. I'm excited to go. I mean, this is the first time I'll ever be at something like this in wearing a costume, and so I'm kind of like overly aware of the extreme geekiness of this, but I'm really excited, and I think it'll be kind of cool. Everyone else there is going to be dressed up, so it's not like I'm going to be the only one, and so I'll be among friends, you know. So I'm excited, and after we do that, I'm going to get some pictures, and we'll put them in the show for next episode, and I'll be able to talk about that. So yeah, that's pretty much, I mean, that and essentially rebuilding my house. That's what I've been up to since the last time, I guess. And I'm actually using retail goods. I'm not using found goods to rebuild my house. Although that would be kind of cool, you know, get some like old, you know, sheet metal and do stuff like that, and that would be cool. But I intend to sell the house, so I have to use like stuff from Home Depot, you know.
Oh yeah. So you're building a house in the Fallout style as well?
yes. But yeah, that's about all I've been up to. I guess, you know, for news, we were talking about this before the show. Wasn't really a lot of big stuff, but we wanted to tie the news into kind of the main topic here. So one of the biggest things was about Fallout New Vegas, the voices. They have confirmed some of the voice work that will be done, and one of them I think was a big surprise to me was Felicia Day, because I actually just interviewed her about a week before this announcement was made, and she didn't say anything about it, which of course, you know, is supposed to keep it secret, but she was also in the Guild Wars 2 trailer, and she's doing a lot more voice work, so I thought it was really cool that here she is in Fallout New Vegas. I think that's pretty incredible. And some of the other voices in there, like we were talking, Ron Perlman, of course, is coming back to do his War Never Changes. And then Matthew Perry from Friends. I thought that was a kind of a funny story. He went on Ellen's show. I think you said he also went on Oprah.
Yeah, it might have been Ellen, because I was just telling Sean that. I said, yeah, my wife, every once in a while, she'll watch Ellen or Oprah, and that's something we don't like to talk about here, but, but you know, so be it.
Yeah. Well, he went on the show, and he literally brought Fallout 3 and gave it to Ellen and said, you need to play this game. And And she's like, okay, sure. And then he got a couple people, like Zac Efron, you were talking about, he got him into playing that game. Now he's, like, addicted to it. So Bethesda was essentially like, you know what, let's get you in the game, you know. And so they got him in there. And, Chris Christopherson, that's another one.
Yes, I was thrilled to death. And those of you who, I mean, everybody probably knows Chris Christopherson, but he's well known, especially to the younger crowd, as who played Whistler on the Blade movies, the one who was like, get away from me, you nipplehead. I mean, I would love Christopherson's voice, and he is the character. It looks like he's going to play in this is just the perfect character. He almost acts like Whistler in the Blade movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So perfect example there.
Yeah, I was always a fan of his. He's a good actor, and I think that his voice is perfect for something like that. It's really gruff, and you know, it's kind of just. You know, it's like perfect for a post-apocalyptic, someone who maybe the radiation got to their throat a little bit. And,
oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that was pretty much the news on that front. But let's go ahead and get into the main topic. Let's start with Fallout 1. This is the original one that came out in 1997. And a lot of people have said that this is the spiritual successor to Wasteland, which came out in 1988. Now, the thing here is I think that Interplay couldn't technically use the name Wasteland because it was still owned by EA at that point, so they had to, and a lot of the parts of the game they couldn't use because it was also owned by EA, so they had to, you know, make a sequel but not make it exactly the same. And they did actually change quite a bit because they built this whole new world for it. And anyone who played Wasteland knows it's kind of a cut and dry, you know, post-apocalyptic game, and it's still to this day it's one of my favorite games of all time, probably my favorite game. And that's mainly because of the influences that it had over me. You know, it's just a great game. Anyone who's not played it, run out right now. Press pause. Run out right now and go buy it.
Yeah, definitely.
But so Fallout came out, and it was in kind of the style of like an alternate history, kind of a 50s atomic age type thing, which I think is really interesting because it's like the sci-fi of the 50s was all about things like, you know, alien ships and ray guns and you know, Buck Rogers kind of thing. And that's something that was, of course, not a reality at the time, but it was what they thought was going to be the future. So that is essentially what the environment and the atmosphere of Fallout, the entire Fallout series, or most of it, is about. It's, you know, nuclear-powered cars and ray guns and, you know, and things like that, where you still have tubes in your computers. You know, they don't have, you know, transistors. It's still all tubes, but vacuum tubes. But you have this, and at the same time you have robots, you know, with intelligent robots that are running around, but they look
almost like Lost in Space.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was gonna say, is it they're robots that are kind of parodies of themselves because they look like something from Lost in Space, you know. They So I think that this world is such a great, great world to make a game in like this. And they continued this on through the other games too. Not all of them, but they really did it with the kind of the main ones. Now, I guess to get more in detail, do you want to talk a little bit more about the detail, like the timeline and everything, how this happened?
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know what, the way I did, you know, it's funny, throughout the years I've tried to describe the kind of world, because it's hard to describe to people who try to put it in their mind. The best way I've ever heard it said is they say it's the setting of the world of tomorrow as they imagined it, like in the golden age of science fiction. So basically it would be like if 1956, if you were to go to like the Epcot Center at Disney World and go look at the great world of tomorrow with the flying cars and the, you know, everything's atomic powered. And it's almost kind of like, you know, like you said, it's almost this goofy sci-fi, 1950s sci-fi look to everything. That is how they pictured the year 2077 to look. And what this game does is it kind of takes a lot of that 1950s propaganda, that very like, gee, things are swell kind of pictures that you would see, you know, on the propaganda back then, and really just run with it. And so, you know, all the buildings have that Art Deco kind of look to it, almost like a Gotham City, you know, a lot of like fancy looking, you know, shapes of the buildings, kind of like, you know, like statues with faces leering down, kind of a thing. And yeah. In fact, the prominent character you probably see in the Fallout games, the little vault boy, is definitely a parody off of a lot of those, you know, duck and cover type posters that you see back then. And the idea of it is that back in there, in this Virgoff world, in their version of 2077, we had this gigantic war against against China. And the reason was because at that time we were fighting over the different resources. And at that particular time, we were fighting over uranium and ended up using those weapons to get the very, you know, to fight over these very things. And so what happened is in 2 hours alone, we managed to just pretty much wipe out the entire world. Now, that's a big piece people try to conceive of, because obviously in the real world, even a full-scale nuclear war wouldn't completely demolish the entire planet. And that's where, you know, you come back to the golden age of science fiction kind of side, where they wouldn't have had our kind of nuclear weapons. They'd have been these super bombs that would have been just gargantuan scale, almost to being a silly in a way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, same kind of world, you know, but it's the idea is they pretty much did cook the entire planet, and it's and both China and us and everybody else pretty much bit it in a matter of 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's the radiation plays a huge part in this game in so many different ways. I mean, you can't eat, you can't go in water, you know, because it's radiated. You can't eat the food. You have to, you know, the radiation affects, there's mutants, there's super mutants, there's underdweller, you know, there's all these different things that are affected by radiation. And I think that the whole nuclear thing plays such a big part in the series because of the fact that in the 50s they were so scared and, they were kind of in awe of nuclear power. You know, they were scared of it, but they were also like, we can power the future with nuclear power, you know, and so that's why you have, like, the nuclear-powered cars and things like this. But ironically, they look like, you know, 55 Buicks. You know, they're big boats, and they're beautiful cars, but and they're all rusted out and blown up, which is kind of funny because it's supposed to be like 200 years later, or I guess
it's almost like they never really they evolved in some ways, but not in other ways. Like you said, yeah. You know, there's still TV tubes, but the computers can do pretty. Like we have artificial intelligence almost by then.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that you were talking about the Pip-Boy. What's his name?
It's not the little Vault Boy character.
Vault Boy, that's it. Yeah, the Vault Boy character. Now, I don't know if I ever mentioned this before, and I was just reminded of this. Did I ever tell you that I got a tattoo of that?
You did?
Yes.
How did I miss this?
I have the Vault Boy tattoo. I have it on my arm. I got it probably in February, I think, or March of this year. Yeah, I completely forgot to mention that. Yeah, it's the one. It's he's like looking forward, and he has his thumb up. Like everything's gonna be okay, you know. Like
yeah, like the, I have it on my window on my car.
Yeah, yeah, it's that one. So, yeah, I got that tattoo.
How about that?
Yeah, I should take a picture of that and show you guys.
You have to do that. I had no idea this. I almost feel like I'm like, now, Sean, I thought we were friends.
You know what's funny though is we went to when you know I went to that farm that we were talking about a couple weeks ago, and I had someone there ask me what it was because it kind of shows through the. It's on my arm, but it's a little bit lower than my sleeve, so half of it kind of shows when I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt. So they were like, hey, what's that? And I didn't, you can't really explain, I mean, I knew that they don't, if you don't identify it immediately, then you don't know the games, you know what I mean? Like, you've never played it, so you don't, so it's hard to explain, well, it's from a Fallout game. So I had to say, it's kind of an icon of the 50s, kind of everything's going to be all right kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Like everything's fine, you know, while there's nuclear bombs blowing up in the background.
Exactly.
You know? And that was, that irony is why I mean, that's why I got this tattoo. I mean, twofold, also because I love the games and they've inspired me so much. But because of that irony, I think is such a great, it's such a powerful message. So it's funny because I've had a couple people recognize it. Also, I went to a water park one time with my kids, and one of the lifeguards there was like, nice tattoo. I was like, oh, thanks. but yeah, anyway, getting back to that, the whole symbolism of that was exactly what the whole Fallout series was about. It was like, everything's fine, you know, nothing to see here. You know, we are still optimistic about things, even though half of our face is blown off, you know. And I think that that's such a... It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, dark humor thing that plays throughout the entire series. And they do it so well. It's really incredible, the humor in some of these games.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the funny thing about it is that is honestly the gist of the reason why the game stuck with me so much, because, you know, aside from, you know, loving history and being kind of a fan of the whole 1950s era, the fact that they kind of mixed and matched this, you know, 1950s era mixed with a little bit of science fiction mixed with the post-apocalyptic, and you end up with this, like Sean said, this very dark-humored game where you're getting a lot of grisly stuff happening, but it's all tongue-in-cheek in a way, because there's always that element of 1950s poking out of it, like the robots that are trying to kill you that work for the government just happen to have, like, a literal brain in their little tube in the top, you know, like something out of a sci-fi flick. And it almost gives it this kind of like style that if you were to sit out there and make like a post-apocalyptic game and make it just like our world, it wouldn't have held as much, just because it gave it this kind of like silly level to it that it just works perfectly.
Yeah. I guess kind of playing along with that too, with a lot of the science and the sci-fi that was going on at that time. One of the major parts of the entire series are the vaults. This was something that, if you've played Fallout 3, you know all about Vault Tech. But in Fallout 1 even, they kind of explain how this all happened. Now, like Jonathan was saying, you know, there was the Great War, which lasted 2 hours, which wiped everything out. But before that, there was the Resource War, like you were saying, you know, where they're fighting over uranium and oil and things like that. And this went on for years and years and years. But the Great War is what kind of knocked everything out. You know, that was it. But before that, now this is in 2077, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So in 2054 is when Vault Tech decided to start making these vaults. And it was kind of what, you know, there were conflicts going on before that, and they were kind of, everyone was getting a little paranoid, so they started actually government-funded by junk bonds, they started making these vaults. Now, they said they made 122 of these, and what's interesting is that we find out later that they're actually, I guess it's kind of a spoiler, but if you haven't played the game by now, you should...
Yeah, you've probably figured out. If you played Fallout, then you know this by now.
Yeah. So they made these vaults as experiments, like social experiments, you know, socio-technical experiments, where, like, one of them had a faulty door, and they wanted to see what would happen, you know, with the radiation. One of them had, they said, like, one of them was all people under the age of 15. One of them was just one guy, you know, in there. And they said that instead of the regular entertainment that they had in there, they just left a box of puppets. Like, they're just trying out all the government or whoever, you know, or the people who funded this, the government, they just tried out these different experiments with everything. And it's pretty crazy to think about it, but back in those days, you know, in that mindset of the 50s, there were a lot of experiments like that going on. And a lot of them that today we would just gasp, you know, even to think about. But that's the way the mindset was. And that's another great kind of play-in, you know, with this Fallout series. So the vaults play such a big part in this. So, like in Fallout 1, you are the vault dweller. I mean, you leave your vault. So you have to find that's the one you have to find the water chip, right?
And this is unheard of, to leave your vault back then. I mean, most of these vaults, you know, like Sean is saying, they're each had a different purpose. And the one that you come from, it's unheard of to leave the vault. Like, why would you go out there? Why would you want to? Yeah. And you're sort of forced to go.
Yeah, it's like everybody who lives in California, they don't really realize that there's people outside of California.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have cousins in California. You're very right there. Some way
everyone who lives in California, I apologize for... No.
Yeah, that was, you know, they just wrote us off
yeah,
the map.
They just pressed stop.
Yeah.
No, but...
Dark humor. There we go.
Yes.
That's a good point. If I can make one quick point too, those of you out there who are trying to picture this, when Sean is mentioning vaults, what he's talking about is basically like this literal, almost fantasy scale underground bunker where you can picture like 10,000 families all going into this mountain with these, you know, this 1950s style underground, like different rooms, and there's like an eating room, and almost the whole thing is almost like undoable just because of the scale that it would take. But what they do is they give it that kind of 1950s bomb shelter look to it. And the idea is that everybody in their happy jumpsuits is going down in the vaults and life is going to be hunky-dory. And the final irony of it is, of course, that, you know, being social experiments, they're being done by experiments by a government who very likely does not exist anymore. And it's almost like the experiments really don't ever amount to anything because nobody really ever was there to compile all the information, or whoever it was who was trying to figure out these experiments probably is dead.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of the ironic part of it. Like some of the things were, you know, I guess it was it Vault 13? Man, I forget the numbers.
Vault 13 was in Fallout 1.
Yeah, was that the one that was made to not open, or was that the one that was actually made to open? Because I know that there were a few that were made to never, ever open, and then there were ones that were made to open in 200 years.
That's right. There, Vault 101 in Fallout 3 is the one that was designed never to open or close, which was, the experiment there was how long can they last.
Yeah.
Vault 13 was actually, you get sent out to go find this water chip. That was the social experiment. The idea was the water chip was going to fail in a certain amount of time.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was almost like, which truth be told, it has this sort of like The Hobbit trying to tie to Lord of the Rings feel. It's like,
yeah,
that's the experiment. And but you almost kind of get this feeling that there was like they had evolved the history a little better by then and were trying to kind of find a reason for why you had done that.
Yeah. And you know what I always enjoyed about that game was the fact that you had a time limit. Like,
yes,
they said that you had 150 days to go out and find that, and that's game days, you know, and it really, it made kind of a sense of urgency. Now, there was a way to extend that. If you commissioned the merchants in the hub, it would extend it by 100 days, so then you had 250 days. They actually later, and I really hate that this happened, but they later, they in version 1.1 of the game, they added, it was kind of like a patch where they made it to where the instead of 500 days, you now had 13 years of in-game time to find the water chip. And it was like, well, what's the fun in that, you know?
Yeah, well, and that was the thing, is there was a sick amount of pressure that you were sent out to find this water chip. And what it means by water chip is you try to picture your water purification system, you know, a recycling system, and you picture this big 50s bulky photo tube looking thing that goes bad, and because of that the water's running out. And so you get basically commissioned to go out into the wasteland and find a replacement chip, and that's supposed to basically save your vault. And of course nobody really knows why it is that you are sent to go get this chip, although if you've heard the intro for this episode you hear a theory of what could have happened. But that's the idea of it, is you're supposed to be a guy who, you know, you were born in the vault, your parents were the ones who went into the vault before the war took place, and you are about to go out in this world that you've never seen, that actually is completely foreign to anybody, even the people who would have known what it looked like beforehand. You're walking basically into this complete wasteland. And just to kind of set the stage here, Fallout 1 takes place in what is essentially Southern California area, kind of like the Los Angeles area up until there's areas that they allude to that are basically Barstow, California. And you can tell that you're kind of moving. If you watch really close on the map, you can make out what is essentially lower, you know, the Southern California area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually, Wasteland was kind of like that too, where they, although it was much, I mean, it was a huge map, it was a small map, but it spanned a long ways, because it had Vegas, it had Los Angeles, it had San Francisco, but, so Fallout 1 was kind of that same area. I mean, it didn't reach all the way to, like, Needles, you know, like in Wasteland, where it had Needles, and it had parts of Nevada and everything. Fallout 1 didn't have anything in Nevada, did it? Didn't go that far.
Yeah, it kind of, yeah, I don't think if it went all the way to Nevada, because it, yeah, most of it was in Southern California. Somebody out there is going to be like, John, you blew it. Now, if it is in Nevada, it would just be, I don't think it did, because this is the first time that we've been in the Mojave Desert all the way to the east, because Fallout Vegas is where that takes place.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, yeah, so that was Southern California, and you know, basically that plot, like we explained, and I think that's great. It was kind of the Lord of the Rings, you know, in search of the one ring, the one water chip. This game was great. It was it was something that we've been waiting for, you know, at that point, 9 years, you know, kind of a spiritual successor to Wasteland. But then the next year, they came out with Fallout 2. in 98. So it was kind of like, it was the same game. It was very similar. The art styles were very similar. The game mechanics were improved, but they also added so much more to it. Now, we're not really going to get into game mechanics because we want to talk about, you know, kind of the plot and everything like that.
Exactly.
But the plot of Fallout 2, I thought was good. I thought it was a lot better, actually. But it was, you know, there were more quests, more dialogue. But it was, again, it was kind of going out and in searching for something. This time you're searching for the Garden of Eden creation kit, which is a Gek. And
you are a different character by this time.
Yeah, this time you're actually the descendant of the previous character, the one in Fallout 1. And how many years was it? Like 30? No, how many years was it after this? I forget.
You know, on that one, I want to say it was...
It's 2241 was when this one took place. And that one, Fallout 1, was in 2161. So Fallout 2 is 80 years later, essentially. And you are the descendant, and you're kind of like a, I don't know, you're in your village of Arroyo.
Yeah, and the reason you actually play a different character, what happened, and this, you know, again, this is kind of a spoiler, but you know what, again, this gets alluded to all throughout the story, and again, if you haven't played it by now, you're probably just, you're going to know this or you're not. But what happened is at the end of Fallout 1, after you do find this chip and you end up stopping this great evil that is out there slowly taking over that you come across, you go back to the vault, and they basically tell you that you're so changed by the world out there, they don't want to let you back in. And so this vault dweller wanders north with some of his friends and ends up in what is essentially Oregon, and settles this village called Arroyo, and over the next 80 years, the village it becomes very tribal, almost like, you know, a lot of face paint and spears, and you're basically in Fallout 2 playing a great-great-grandson of the original Vault Dweller, and by this time, the Vault Dweller is almost like an icon. Like,
yeah.
It's a very hushed story that is very sacred to them, and, even the jumpsuit is like the sacred thing, you know?
Yeah, so you're actually considered the Chosen One because you are, you know, a descendant like that. And so, they send you out to go get this Gek. I don't know, I thought that the world of Fallout 2 was so much more broad, like so much bigger. It was more detailed. It was even though the graphics and the mechanics were essentially similar. You know, a lot of it was actually identical. But Fallout 2 was such a better game. Although I think if we were going to recommend people to buy, to kind of get ready for Fallout New Vegas and kind of buy these, definitely start from Fallout 1, I would say. But you will find that, most people, I guess, would find that Fallout 2 is just a lot better game. And the fact that it only came out a year later, and, you know, they use a lot of the same assets, I guess, mechanic-wise, engine-wise, and then they just kind of added, a lot bigger story and all this to it, which I think it definitely worked. Fallout 2 is a great game.
Well, and most of the story that you hear about in Fallout 2 is the most direct relation to what is going to be Fallout New Vegas, because partially because of the development team, but also because of the overall story. And it just dawned on me, somebody back there was probably like, wait, you guys were talking about the Gek? What's a Gek? And just to really quick set the stage on this, the idea of it is that your village is going through this drought, and your village is dying, essentially, and you are sent out to track down what is called the Garden of Eden Creation Kit, and it is this basically this magical suitcase complete with photo tubes and everything that the vault people, when the vault was going to open up, the idea was they would take this Garden of Eden creation kit with them and push this button, and magically the land around them would become fertile. And so you are sent, based on the knowledge of this great ancestor and this great number 13, which is, of course, Vault 13, to go out and find one of these because it's the only thing that can save the village. And, of course, you get tied up in what is essentially a much, much larger problem.
Yeah, much larger.
yeah. And I suppose we could actually, we could touch on a little bit of it. Now, those of you out there who are wondering why we're kind of breezing through this a little bit, we're going to touch on overall story stuff and kind of come back to direct relation stuff that's going to have more to do with New Vegas momentarily. So if those are out there like, you guys didn't even talk about this or this, we're actually, some of that's coming still. So
yeah, we're kind of breezing through the main stuff here. The games are so detailed that it would really be hard to sit here in an hour, hour and a half, and kind of talk about, you know, every
That's
little
right.
branch of storyline, because there is some incredible stuff in there. But we just want to kind of get to, you know, even for people who have never played it, maybe don't even play games and are listening to this, it could be something that you might find yourself interested in, especially the atmosphere and the environment of it being that kind of, you know, 50 sci-fi alternate history kind of a thing, which I think is really interesting. I think a lot of people, if you're into that, you know, and maybe you play games but you haven't played this game, I think that that would be the thing you should definitely check out.
Absolutely. One of the things that we wanted to do as well as kind of touch on the story, and again, we don't go over the story as much just because we do want to encourage you to go out and play, you know, Fallout 1 and 2. You know, go play out and play Fallout 3, get some of that story overall. But what we wanted to do in particular was talk about, you know, a couple of the major players out there, in particular a couple of factions that are the big players that play either into all the games together or into New Vegas. And a lot of them actually play out through all of them. One of the biggest is a group you'll hear, and if you ever see the picture of Fallout and you see the guy in the gigantic power armor, that is actually the most famous icon in the Fallout universe, and that is this group called the Brotherhood of Steel. And essentially, the Brotherhood of Steel shows up in all the Fallout games, and what they are is basically an older military group that was in the bunkers when the bombs hit, kind of came out of the bunker realizing what was happening, and realized that try to basically become the paladins of the desert. They're sort of like the good guys trying to protect the weaker guys. And one of their main goals is to protect a lot of this technology that they're afraid is going to get lost, almost to the point of becoming kind of insane about it. But they do use this gigantic power armor, and their main enemies that they run into quite a bit are the super mutants, which are another character you'll see quite a bit throughout the Fallout universe. And these super mutants, we touch on this a little bit in one of the older episodes, but the idea that the government was messing with genetic research and viral research, and they created what they called the forced evolutionary virus, the FEV virus. And what it was supposed to do was create the perfect super soldier. And instead what it did was created this insanely crazy mutated tank of a monster that actually ends up leaking out into the world via some of these busted open Air Force bases. One in particular is in Southern California called Mariposa, and you actually hear reference to this in Fallout 3, and you'll hear it all through the story in Fallout 1 and 2. But that is where, whenever you hear about these super mutants, and you're like, who are these guys? Well, the super mutants, that's what it's from, is this virus that eked its way out into the wasteland. In some places, it's deliberate. One of the characters you come across in Fallout 1, one of the main bad guys, is actually doing this on purpose. But the Brotherhood of Steel have kind of pitted themselves against these super mutants and also against the raiders out there, that they're going to, you know, protect the good guys and, you know, be the voice of justice. And, you know, so you'll see them out there with their gigantic power armor and their big, huge chain guns. And you actually become one of them in Fallout 3. Actually, funny enough, I think you become one in pretty much all the games in some form. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's probably the most well-known faction of the story. Even Fallout Tactics in particular, you are a member of the Brotherhood of Steel in that game as well.
Yeah, I always liked the Brotherhood of Steel, and I know like your first encounter with them is they're guarding these the entrances down into their bases. And what I think is kind of iconic, I guess, to go along with this, is the power armor is actually from Wasteland. It's one of those things that was actually taken from Wasteland. Like later in the game, you get power armor when you're in this underground bunker. And so they kind of carried that over to Fallout. And so I was always excited by that, because the power armor in Wasteland was just incredible. It was just like invincible. It was like an easy button. But so you see this stuff, and that's what it evolved, you know, to the... When we get to Fallout 3, it evolved to the point where that's what they showed in the first trailers, you know, and it's like, oh, they have the power armor still, yes, you know, they have that helmet and the, you know, and you see that stuff and you're like, yes, Brotherhood of Steel, and you kind of befriend, you know, the Brotherhood of Steel. It's a large part of the game in Fallout 3, where you kind of play through that storyline, and then of course there are the kind of bad Brotherhood of Steel guys, you know, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, that's one of the most important parts of the story, the Brotherhood of Steel. You cross them right and left. They are one of the big players in this next Fallout Vegas game. And what's interesting is that they've alluded to even the idea that there's not really a right or wrong in the next one. The Brotherhood of Steel almost seem to kind of play kind of a like an evil role, so to speak, because, like I said, they get a little bit obsessed with, well, they get a lot obsessed with their need to protect the technology, almost to the point of kind of trampling over people. They're very much, you know, this knight-oriented, like this medieval knight-type scenario where they would show up in your village and you're recruited, come with us. Whoa, don't take my kids, you know, and too bad, you're coming with us. And it's almost, you know, they're good guys, but they're kind of like bad guys at the same time. And one of the other factions you come across that the Brotherhood of Steel, you find them at war with quite a bit, is the next faction we talk about that shows up in a few of the games, Fallout 2 in particular, and then Fallout 3, they play a huge part, and that is a group called the Enclave. And just, you know, not to get into too much spoiler on Fallout 2, the idea of the Enclave is that they are sort of a remnant of the original government, kind of a shadow government that saw the signs that we were going to get to this point where this war was going to play out. And so what they decided to do was get out of Dodge and basically hightail it to this base they had in an offshore oil rig, you know, wait for the bombs to fall. And then they had this great idea that they were going to go out there and just start again. Like, oh, this is our world. We're going to go out there and start all over again. And one of the things they're obsessed with is getting rid of the mutation. They're very racist towards mutants and ghouls, ghouls being, you know, humans that were hit with radiation so much that they've actually deteriorated. And so they also happen to have more technology than just about everybody left on the planet. And so they're always using these very high-tech laser weapons, and they're using these fancy helicopters called vertibirds. And if you played Fallout 3, you've seen the Enclave everywhere. And that was actually sort of a branch off of the original Enclave that was in the West Coast. And so they're huge players in the game. It was interesting that in Fallout 2, you actually, it's interesting just how much into their world you get with the whole story in Fallout 2 as opposed to even 3, because 3, you're, you know, on their bases and you're dealing with their leader and their president. But going back and playing Fallout 2, it's amazing how much storyline is under the hood of that game.
Yeah, and I, like I was alluding to earlier, I kind of missed a lot of that when I played Fallout 2 the first time. And it wasn't until I played Fallout 3 and then I went back to Fallout 2, I was like, oh yeah, the Enclave. Because in Fallout 3, they just explain it so much better, and they, you know, put it in your face a lot more. And I guess it's kind of like that with the Brotherhood of Steel too. But yeah, it's, you know, once you figure out and you realize who the Enclave are because of Fallout 3, and then you go back to Fallout 2, you're like, oh, the Enclave, yeah.
Exactly. It's almost like in the Enclave in Fallout 2, they just sort of like, you never even hear about them till almost the end, and all of a sudden, bam, there they are. You know, and in Fallout 3, they do such a good job of giving, I mean, the ambience of it and the whole feel for that, you know, the fact that you know, right from the get-go, the first thing you see out the gate is one of those iBots that's transmitting this voice of the president, you know, and you get the feeling right out there that they've got their feelers and everything out there, and they do. I mean, you'll see, you know, people look up and you see these vertebrates flying over. The Brotherhood of Steel is even intimidated by them because they're like, wait, they have better stuff than us. And in, you know, Fallout 3, there's a direct war happening between them and the Enclave. And so they're a very big player. Literally, it's almost better to go and play Fallout 3 and then go back and play Fallout 2 just because you'll tag immediately off the bat little details where there'll be a fallen vertebrate. You'll be like, I know what that is. And before it would be like, what is this helicopter, you know? Yeah, the next faction we'll talk about is the New California Republic and the New California Republic Rangers. And what they are, it's interesting because they were touched on a lot in Fallout 2, and then it kind of got quiet. But in Fallout New Vegas, they play a massive part, and they're actually at war against the Brotherhood of Steel for control of this area in the Mojave Desert, and in particular Hoover Dam. Because in New Vegas, we know that it's an area that was not hit with a nuke, and so, you know, Hoover Dam actually still functions. That's why Vegas is able to still get its power. But the New California Republic, for those of you who, and this is funny because this is something I did not pick up on until I went back and played again. In Fallout 1, you meet one of the first towns you run into is a city called Shady Sands, and it's very, you know, kind of a tribal kind of city. And you end up befriending this girl named Tandy, who's the daughter of the leader of this village, and she actually ends up getting kidnapped, and you help rescue her. Well, in Fallout 2, she went on to take over the village for her father and created this huge city called the New California Republic. And the idea of it is that she built this walled city where, you know, law was the law. We don't tolerate drugs. We don't tolerate violence. But it's almost to the point where she kind of gets so obsessed with it that even it kind of becomes this weird, almost like the world is too good to be true kind of a thing. And so it kind of can get brutal at times because they're not very forgiving of things outside that realm. But she has this very clean city and they want to keep it that way. We want all the bad things to stay out. And Tandy, by then, is actually older in the game when you finally meet her, and she actually almost recognizes you, like, I know you, you saved my life. Oh, and then she realizes, oh, you're a descendant of him. Well, we're not quite sure how this plays directly into Vegas, although we know that the storyline is roughly, I think they said 30 years after Fallout 3, and so my guess is that, you know, the New California Republic has continued to kind of branch outward, and somewhere in the midst of this, them and the Brotherhood of Steel have started to butt heads over, they allude that it's just the Hoover Dam, but I'm guessing there's going to be a lot more under the hood than just that, and that's one of the big faction crashes that you kind of run into, is here's these two very obvious factions that you've considered good factions in the past that you're going to have to choose from.
So what else do we have? We have a couple other ones that are introduced in New Vegas?
Yeah, New Vegas actually does introduce a couple. One of the main ones is one called Caesar's Legion, and they're a group of slavers that are based completely off of the idea of the whole, you know, ancient Rome idea. And so their whole hierarchy is based on everything that Rome would have. They wear almost like centurion-looking armor, but in this case, they're the ones who are direct contact with the Brotherhood of Steel and the New California Republic. So you have all these different factions crashing, but they're pretty much the obvious bad guys. They're the ones that sort of you pick up pretty quickly that they have zero tolerance for like in their case, I like to compare it to The Stand, where, you know, when Randall Flagg had the group in Las Vegas, you know, he would say, well, my group is good. We don't have drugs and we don't have, you know, violent problems. And it was because anybody who had drugs, even though they were the bad guys, they were crucifying these guys up in the middle of nowhere, and that's what these guys are doing. They're very Roman-oriented. And we don't totally know how deep this goes, but we do know that they're pretty crazy out of their minds to the point of being obsessive on this.
So I would imagine that Caesar's Palace is probably their kind of base.
You know, that was actually brought up in one of the interviews, and one of the things they asked was, is, you know, that going to play a piece into it? Now, the 8 casinos that they have, and this is going to be kind of cool because, you know, we're those of you out there who haven't caught wind of this part of the news, you're going to be kind of excited about this, but at the same time, we're kind of all still in the dark about this. We know that there are 8 casinos, and none of them are actually based on any we really do have, but they all are in the theme of the old 1950s Vegas when it was just, you know, Bugsy Siegel-style Vegas, yeah. You know? And what's cool about it, one of them is actually even a vault. There is a Vault 28 where everybody down there was gambling addicts. And one of the characters who's one of the primary characters, and this is where the mystery comes in, is there's a guy who named Mr. House, and no doubt the joke is off of the idea that the house always wins. Mr. House controls New Vegas, and he's this very elusive character. Nobody's ever met him. He has nothing but money, and he lives at the top of what is essentially a playoff of the stratosphere, the giant needle. And you can tell that from the get-go that this character is a play off of Howard Hughes. That, you know, he was so germophobic he stayed up there. And I'm actually wondering if we're waiting for some kind of plot twist of who he really is. But the idea was, all we know is that he's somebody who apparently was cryogenically frozen and lived before the war. And there's supposed to be a direct relation of why he froze, why he keeps New Vegas in the style of the 50s. He doesn't want it to kind of evolve into this wasteland feel. He wants to keep it almost like you could go there and you could go see the, you know, the Rat Pack singing. In fact, there's one that's kind of based off the Rat Pack. But apparently the New California Republic controls most of it at the moment, but Caesar's Legion wants to get their mitts into it more than anything. And obviously there must be a ulterior motive other than the slaving, but that is where the mystery is going to play in. It's going to be interesting to see what's going on there.
Wow, I didn't know all that. That's pretty interesting stuff. Are there, like, a lot of factions? You said there's 8 casinos. Are there different factions for each of those casinos, or how does that work?
Now, the one thing we do know, I don't know if there's necessarily eight particular factions, but they are treated like, the way they do these casinos is very interesting. They definitely have different styles. Like, one of them is called the Tops, and it's kind of your, the Rat Pack kind of music, and you got the guys up there tap dancing on the stage, and you can actually see it in the preview. The Vault 28 is the actual vault that this Mr. House won. He actually won it in a bet. And what he did was he turned the vault into the casino. And so that's kind of cool. You'll kind of have this casino that's in the that is literally an old vault, which is kind of funny because the first thing that dawned on me was Fallen Earth. Isn't that like the little social areas? They're old vaults that they've converted to a casino. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting parallel. But then there's the Stratosphere-style one where we know Mr. House lives up there, and it's alluded that you also at some point can sort of get a penthouse up on the top, kind of playing into the Tenpenny Tower Fallout 3 idea. We don't know. Actually, that's one of the cool things. We don't know how far that goes. This is still new. Yeah. But it's going to be interesting because I like the idea that this is a part of the city that nuclear war hasn't destroyed it completely. I mean, it's just mostly radiation and wasteland, but, you know, the power's still on. There's, like, neon lights, but everything is kind of run down, and the world, you know, the area is patrolled by these kind of goofy-looking robots with giant black-and-white TV screens that have a picture of, like, the little cartoon 1950s policeman with the little bats, like, you know, watch what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's going to be a hoot. They've really nailed down the look of it. But you can tell that these guys, a lot of the stuff, and this is probably the biggest piece. Those of you Fallout fans out there who know that there almost was going to be a Fallout 3 by the original team, it was called the Van Buren Project. One of the biggest complaints people say is Van Buren, they released a lot of the info for Van Buren, what they had planned to do. And everybody's like, oh, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? A lot of the Van Buren content made its way into this game. It's almost like they had the ability now to do what they had wanted to, only further. And so we don't know the gist of all of it, but one thing, the interview was with Fergus Urquhart, you know, one of the main producers. He was talking about how they just had a field day with a lot of what they had wanted to do, and it's almost like they allude that they're glad they didn't make the original one, because this time they were able to kind of take it further with the 3D aspect. And also give it more, they've modified it quite a bit. There's a more of a first-person shooter feel rather than the simulated kind. And so we're in for a real treat.
Yeah, because the team from Interplay who worked on 1 and 2, they kind of skipped 3 because Bethesda took over and all that. So that was kind of like Bethesda's first shot at it. But now Bethesda's, you know, got kind of, I guess, smart, and they were like, let's get those original guys in here and make this new game. So that, I mean, for anyone who has been playing the first ones, you know, that's what makes it so much more exciting. And that's why we're making this episode, too, to kind of, you know, let you know how that all ties in.
Yeah, that was the biggest complaint I've ever heard with Fallout 3, was people were like, well, it was a great game. And, you know, truth be told, I don't think it gets enough credit. I mean, going back and playing Fallout 2, there are parallels in 3 where I'm like, okay, for those guys not being developers, they tied things in that I would never have come up with. Just a little real quick side story that most people don't pick up on. One of the main characters that shows up in all the Fallout games is a guy named Harold. Really goofball-looking ghoul. And he's actually tied in with one of the main characters, bad guys, in the first one. Well, in the first game, you meet him inside one of the cities. In the second game, he's actually in control of a city called Gecko, that basically a ghoul city that's surrounded, basically took over a nuclear power plant because they dig on the radiation. It makes them feel good. But he's got this kind of goofy eyeball. And it was funny because as I was talking to him, I'm like, my God, this guy seems familiar. And then one day I'm driving home and I just suddenly made the connection. Do you remember in Fallout 3, the city called Oasis?
Yeah.
You remember the tree?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Fallout 2, there's a tree branch growing out of his head. By the time Fallout 3 came around, he became the tree. And yeah, it was a parallel I never made till that moment.
I thought they explained that, because it seems like I knew that or something.
See, that's it. I didn't know, I hadn't played Fallout 2 that far in, and so, I knew the storyline, but it was one piece of the story that totally eluded me, and that's why all of a sudden it dawns on me, like, Harold's the only character to really appear in every single game, almost.
You know, I think, I'm not positive, I'm thinking back, maybe I'm being optimistic here, but I think he was in Wasteland 2.
I think he was. That rings a bell, like big time rings a bell.
But I'll have to look into that. But yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, but it almost puts a real those of you who've gotten to the part in Oasis, let's just say that there's a way to kill him that's good, because he wants, you know, this is a character who's basically had enough of the wasteland, and there's kind of an evil way to kill him, and it almost makes the evil way seem a whole lot more sad, because all of a sudden I'm like, wait, you're the guy from Fallout 2. And it was kind of a neat little parallel. So kudos to the Fallout 3 devs for keeping that kind of detail. But the reason why this Fallout is almost more waited for, and they've already said that the pre-orders have surpassed Fallout 3, which we expected. I think Fallout 3 converted a lot of people, was the fact that the original devs, you know, Obsidian is well known for taking an engine and going back and adding more to it. They've done it with, you know, Neverwinter Nights 2. They're the ones who went back and took the Old Republic engine and made Old Republic 2, and they love to take somebody's engine and go back and add on to their pieces of the story. Well, that's exactly what they did. They saw Bethesda, and rather than fight them like Interplay, because Interplay, most of the original Fallout or dev team from Fallout is moved on, and Interplay just seems to have money troubles right and left. Well, these guys went, you know what? Why compete? Let's join them. Probably showed up on their doorstep and went, hey, well, we're the original guys. What do you say you give us your engine and let us make a game and you publish it? And, you know, though, I bet those guys were like, hallelujah. So it's the first Fallout that's almost to the metal.
Yeah. Well, that's like when at E3 when I saw Brian Fargo and I thought, wow, Alec, I know he's not still with Interplay. And here he is at the Bethesda booth. Like, what's going on here? So maybe they were, I don't know, getting some expert opinions.
Yeah, they probably become good friends working together, especially with the engine and the art. You could tell right off the bat the art is, a lot of the character models look the same, but you can tell, as soon as on that original teaser trailer when they showed the flag that said New California Republic, I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, you could already tell that, you know, everybody, those out there who complained, you know, it was a Fallout 3 was great, but it just wasn't Fallout. Well, this one is Fallout. If you don't like this one, you've become angry. because this is as close to Van Buren. I mean, this is pretty much Van Buren, and that's what's so cool about it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even going beyond New Vegas, now, Bethesda, they had a contract. I think it was 3 games that they've signed on to make in the Fallout universe, and of course they've made Fallout 3, they're working on, which will be released next a month and a half, Fallout New Vegas, and people are saying that Fallout 4 will actually be, of course that's not the official name or anything, but there will be another one after that, and they're saying that New Vegas isn't technically in the series. I don't know. It's kind of one.
Actually,
of those...
they it's even cooler than that, because they own it now. It's theirs. Yeah. And that's what's kind of cool about it is, you know, there's still that fight over the online game version, which just makes me want to bang my head against the wall, because people forget the original Fallout guys aren't in most of that team over there that's making the online one. Yeah. But, so the fact that they own it, you know, Bethesda can, I mean, good heavens, they've been scooping up companies left and right. It just dawned on me, I'm like, my God, they've become the superpower. They are the vault.
They are.
they just run with this. This is fantastic. I hope that this is a working with Obsidian, if the goal that I'm actually hoping that this goes to is that they're able to kind of turn this more over to Obsidian and let these original Fallout devs just go crazy with this.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking, I guess kind of our closing thought on this would be the MMO, you know, like you said. Granted, it's not, you know, it's being worked on by Interplay, and granted, it's not, the original guys. It's actually being, the engine, I think, or some part of it is being worked on by the guys who are doing Earthrise, mm-hmm. Masthead Studios. And we had, you know, I had an interview with Atanas Atanasoff from Masthead on this show at one point from, I think it was E3 last year, GDC or something. And, so we know it's in good hands. I mean, we've seen kind of the stuff coming out of Earthrise and what that's going to be like. Although, you know, granted, it's not the original guys, but there a lot of, I guess some of the biggest things that people are worried about with Fallout Online is the, how can you have a massively multiplayer game in the apocalypse? You know, how are they going to do this? And I just can't help thinking, you know, they do it all right with Fallen Earth. You know, you don't you go in major cities and there's people all around, but then, you know, you run out and you don't really see anyone out in the wasteland. And I think that's done well, and it's all persistent, and it's a, you know, a true MMO. They could also do it instanced, where they could be, you know, kind of like Guild Wars, where as soon as you leave the city, then it's all yours. You know, it's your own little instance version, and there's no one out there to bother you, which I guess could work as well. And then I start thinking about, like, the factions, you know, like the factions we were talking about, the Enclave and New California Republic and Brotherhood of Steel. And I hope that they incorporate that somehow to be, you know, like a traditional MMO where you can choose which faction you are, or maybe it'll be chosen for you, you know, according to your gameplay or whatever. I don't know. But, I mean, if you look at the basic elements of an MMO, I think that this could actually work. And I think that, I don't know, I'm pretty excited about it. I know a lot of hardcore fans aren't excited by it because they say that it's going to be, you know, it's just going to mess everything up. But what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you where my mind comes from, because everybody, when they announced Fallout Online, you know, I, you know, everybody's like, oh my gosh, you must be freaking out. And I, you know, one of the things that I'll tell you, the main thing that worries me, and you know, that you guys have heard us mention this in the past, you know, the fact is that Interplay, part of the contract was with Interplay was in a lot of trouble and they needed funding. And so what they did was they sold off most of the Fallout rights. They gave them to Bethesda. And the idea was Bethesda has control of the single player game, but Interplay gets to take a crack at the online version, but they had to have at least enough to show that they were doing something with it by a certain date. Well, that's where the whole lawsuit came into play, because they didn't have anything, at least by the standards that they had directed. And so what happened is Bethesda hit him with the lawsuit. You know, Interplay got defensive and started bringing other people in to try to hurry it up. Mm. What scares me about this is I'm looking at Interplay going, okay, this is our Fallout universe. So help me, if you guys, in the midst of trying to protect your IP, throw this game out as fast as you can and make it crap because you're hurrying, you're going to disappoint me. And oh, that's yeah. The part that scares me is, you know, not so much that the developers aren't the real guys, although that is kind of interesting that they're not. I mean, there's a few that are, but that can be done. Fallout 3, none of them were the original guys. They did fantastic.
Yeah.
But I just am worried that what we're getting is somebody's hurried up, rushed version to quickly get that out there as fast as they can to protect their own butt. Yeah. And that, this game, there's so much about this game that kind of reeks of that so far. And now, granted, we don't have a lot of information at all, but just how fast things are creeping out there, it's almost like they're like, we got a website. See, we got a website. See, it's a website. And you're just like, how long did it take you to throw that together? And like I said, I could be completely off base, but there's that you know, Smeagol part of me that's like, Master wants me to come now. I mean, I'm like, the whole time I'm looking out the corner of my eye, just waiting for some guy with an arrow to shoot at me. And I hope I'm wrong. I mean, chances are the more we go into this and start seeing some things pour out, I will probably be the first to change my mind. But it just sounds a lot like it was a little bit too rushed to try it. Like, quick, get something out. We need help. Here, you come over here. We'll pay you. Quick, do it. We're going to lose all the money. And it was like, don't you dare break this game. You know?
I think that breaks down to a problem with a lot of MMOs, though. I think people who develop MMOs, not all, of course, but some of them think, well, you know, we can get something out that's, you know, passable, and we'll start charging a monthly fee, and then from there we'll build the game, you know. And it's like, no, you can't. You really can't do that, you know.
Especially not now.
Yeah, and I really hope that. I guess that's maybe a thing from the last couple of years, so people are kind of wising up to that. But I hope that that's not something that they plan to do, because that would be tragic.
Well, and we'll be the first to say that. You know, does that mean I'm not excited? No, not at all. I mean, there is this part of me that is kind of pretending like to hate this, because if I let it click, I might start peeing my pants in public, and that can't happen, because it might
not
be going
again,
from
right.
So good to so good. I mean, it would be like kind of embarrassing. So, yeah. But truth be told, if things start coming out and they really are showing us more than just what appears to be some kind of like mock screenshot, then I will be the first in line to start cheering, because I don't know. I just have this. It's not very usual for me to have an instinctive like, what's going on here? Like, I'm somebody who's usually like the first one in line, like, yay! But there's something about this one that's like, this doesn't feel right. But then again, I don't know. I could be proved wrong, and that would make me happy. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, hopefully that kind of, you know, we kind of breezed over the game, so to speak. Again, we weren't trying to focus so much on the game as kind of give you a feel for kind of these areas that this game took place in, kind of get you a feel for the way that the world happened, things that, you know, some of the major players out there, so you can kind of get the feel for them. Now, the details, we're going to leave that to you. We want you to go back to, especially, you know, if you were going to just do one of the games, at least play Fallout 2, just because that's the one where most of the story directly relates to New Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's also the one that most Fallout fans consider overall the best one. It's a longer game, but it's a lot. There's some, you know, engine modifications they did to make the game a little smoother. And truth be told, it's rare for me to just sit down and blow through a game like that. That game had me riveted, and it probably has the most probably interesting soundtrack. The guy who does that, the guy is a freaking genius, because it's very ethereal sounding kind of music, but he always has this kind of like, you know, uses a lot of sound effects that would be in the area you're in kind of a thing. And it's definitely worth playing. You know, you can get it on Steam. You can get it from Walmart, even. Just look for the Fallout Trilogy. So, you know, you can even play it on a laptop or a netbook. It's that old. So if you do, let me at least give one piece of advice. Those of you out there who either want to go back and play Fallout again, or those of you who are going to try to play Fallout and go, wait a minute, how come it's coming out in funny colors? Make sure you look for get either onto the wiki page for Fallout, or one of the biggest pages for Fallout fans is a site called No Mutants Allowed. And one of the things they have are links to these, what they've called the Fallout Restoration Projects. And what they are, and me and Sean were actually just alluded to the idea, we have no idea how these guys do this, but they add back in a lot of extra lost footage, they fix a lot of bugs, they make it so you can play them on modern systems without the color issues, like you used to not be able to play them. And if you're going to go back and play it, do it with these modifications, because it really changes a lot of the game. It even kind of fills in some continuity errors, which is pretty cool. So check that out.
Great. Great. Yeah, When I start playing this again, I definitely need to do that, definitely. So, yeah, I hope that this episode will help people out to kind of figure out what's going on in the series and just prepare you for the future. No, prepare you for Fallout New Vegas, because that is actually coming out, I think it's the 19th of October.
The 19th of October, yeah. A date that will live in infamy.
That's actually close to when Fallout 3 came out. It's like the 28th of October, I think, of 2008.
You're not even kidding. I still regard that summer as the longest summer of my entire life. I'm trying not to relive it.
Well, cool. Let's go ahead and wrap this show up then. If anyone wants to send us an email, it's ttaftermath@gmail.com. You can check us out on the website at throughtheaftermath.blogspot.com. You can check us out. We also have a Twitter page. We have Facebook, all that stuff. We're way into the social media.
Yeah, we're connected to the hubs out there. And oh yeah, and just a quick reminder, those of you out there who haven't listened to the intro shows and voted, we've actually got a ton of votes pouring in, and it's getting close on a couple. Let's just say that there are two spots in the number one spot for the favorite intro that are fighting for which one is going to be number one. So if you haven't voted, make sure you get over to, you know, link it through our website. You can go and vote for your favorite top three intros. And let's see if we can break this. Every time I think that one of them is going to win, somebody else hits it on the other one. I'm like, wow, this is going to be brutal.
Nice. I can't wait to see the results. I want to see if the ones I voted for won. Are you going to announce that next show?
You know, it will probably be the next show. I'm actually kind of watching and you know, it takes a minute for everybody to kind of listen to shows and go back and listen. And so I'm hoping to just do it on the next show and kind of announce which ones were which. So,
cool.
We'll see how it plays out.
Cool, that'll work. And next show should be after Dragon Con, and do kind of like I did last year and just talk about the panels I saw, because there's a whole track of post-apocalyptic stuff. I mean, they have a whole, you know, schedule for it. So I'm going to follow that as much as I can. I have some panels there where I'm speaking as well, so I won't be able to go the whole time. And if anybody wants to come see me, it's not post-apocalyptic related, but I will be doing the Guild Wars panel on Monday. So I will be following that post-apocalyptic track, though, every chance I get, and I'll be in costume. So if you're going to be there and you see a crazy guy, I don't want to describe my costume. I'll just let it kind of go and show pictures of it later because people are going to be.
Every time somebody looks strange, you can be like, Sean? Sean? Are you Sean? No, you're not Sean. Are you Sean?
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. But yeah, I can't wait to come back and talk about it. And well, that should be the next episode in about probably 2 or 3 weeks because let's see, next week is Dragon Con, so it should be maybe about 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
So should be a lot of fun. So until then, this is Sean.
And this is Jonathan saying, still alive out there, Bridges. Oh my God, I can't believe I just did it like that.